We're ready now to continue with session five, continuing with our bridges to gratitude. The tools and the spiritual practices that we use to build bridges from the idea of gratitude to its implementation in our lives. One of the ways that we can certainly use to encourage gratitude in ourselves is to look at the gifts and graces that we've been given and to work through those. Sometimes we get tired of cliches such as just be yourself or follow your bliss or do what you really want to do. There may be even a hidden feeling of embarrassment when we struggle to respond to these suggestions, especially if we don't have a clue who we are or what lies deep within us. Truthfully, it's often like going on an archaeological dig inside ourselves to discover who we are and what our bliss might be and what we really want to do. It's difficult to be grateful if we're doing something that we don't want to do. Many of us have spent so many years trying to live up to others' expectations that we end up living our lives according to another person's roadmap. Our creative and emotional wiring is just as unique as a thumbprint. And simply by coming to know the gifts and graces that God has given us, sometimes can unleash a torrent of gratitude. There's the wonderful story that's familiar to most of us of Rabbi Susha, which illustrates the importance of the task of self-discovery. The fable goes that when the wise old rabbi knocks on the doors of heaven, he's not asked why he wasn't more like King David or Moses or Elijah. Rather, he's asked, why weren't you Susha? Now, one of the most accurate aids to this discovery, I think, comes in the form of a daily journaling practice called the Examine. It's a variation on an ancient practice, substituting positive questions for the usual negative ones. People who are puzzled about what lights their fire can get amazing clues after employing this practice for just a few weeks. And the practice is basically this. At the close of the day, you answer these questions in your journal. What touched or moved me today? What surprised me today? What inspired me today? What was life-giving to me today? What was life-taking to me today? What did I learn about God and myself today? And what was I doing when I lost track of time? Believe me, if these questions are answered over a period of weeks, they can form an accurate blueprint of our sometimes complex inner wiring. The discovery helps us to focus on significance rather than success and on having a purpose instead of just a job. Another way that that we can build a bridge to gratitude is by a practice called Lend a Hand. And this is familiar to all of us. Helpers High is a term that we've heard before, and it describes the positive reactions of the physical body that are triggered when we help one another. We become grateful that we have money or food or time to share, and we are uplifted by the thankful responses of others. It seems to me that all of this helping others, this loving our neighbors as ourselves, happens simultaneously, not just a matter of if we do this, then this happens. We can understand and accept the forgiveness of God as we learn to forgive others. We tend to love others as we learn to love ourselves. We feel gratitude toward others as we feel gratitude toward ourselves and toward God. And we begin to feel more happy and grateful as we support others in being happy and grateful. So let's lend a hand. Another practice that involves action is called misfortune and meaning. We've all had times of suffering in our lives, experiences that we've lived through that have unsettled us and taken us on a path of growth. And there are many inspiring stories of folks whose misfortunes have been catalysts for deeper meaning in their lives. Often, traumatic situations, which seemed almost unbearable at the time, can become occasions where some people are broken open rather than broken down. Now let's move on to bridges of the mind. We've talked about bridges of the body, and these are practices that involve tools that I would normally associate with thought processes. Let's begin by realizing that there's no such thing as an idle thought. Thoughts produce energy, which is the power that produces action, whether it's positive or negative. Energy produces experience and events, so emotions like ingratitude and entitlement don't appear out of nowhere. They're born in the hidden places where resentment and envy dwell, in our thoughts. So the thoughts that we choose to hold have incredible power. The parable of the two wolves always reminds me of the responsibility we have for that choice, and it's a wonderful story. The story goes that an old Cherokee chief was listening to his despondent grandson, who described a battle between two friends on the playground. The grandfather got a faraway look in his eyes and said, "Oh, I know what you mean, but the real battle is somewhere else, and it's between the two wolves." "What do you mean?" questioned the little boy. And the old man replied, "We all have a battle raging inside, every one of us, where no one else can see. One of the wolves is evil. He wears anger, envy, jealousy, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, false pride, inferiority, superiority, ego. But the other wolf is good. He wears joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. It's an ongoing battle between the two wolves." "Well," said the grandson, "who wins?" And the wise old man replied, "Oh, the one you feed." After first hearing this story, I began to notice something. I noticed the subtle and, well, sometimes not so subtle ways that I fed the negative wolf by repeating a criticism, by calling a friend to complain about some perceived slight, by engaging in a vengeful fantasy of, "Well, if he does that again, here's what I'll say," or "Here's what I wish I'd said." Just as life-enhancing emotions grow by being fed, so do the emotions that choke the life from us. Energy flows where attention goes. Another descriptive metaphor for this process is what I call the groove of gratitude. Our negative thoughts and resulting litanies of complaint create grooves in our psyches, just as a wheelbarrow carves out a rut in the dirt, burrowing deeper as it reinforces the same track over and over and over. If we want to establish new patterns of thought, we place our attention on thankfulness, joy, love, so that the groove of gratitude within us is deepened. So even when circumstances take us out of that groove temporarily, we can slip back into it with ease and grace. Now I'm going to talk about a few practices that can help us dig that groove. One is the very familiar gratitude journal. This is a familiar discipline that seems so simple that we may not give proper credence to its power, because it really can change our perspective. The directions are brief. At the end of the day, you list 5 things for which you are grateful. The more precise, the better. For instance, instead of being thankful that the weather was lovely today, express thanks for the warmth of the sun as it fell on your face, or the cool breeze that filled the house when you opened the windows. Record how you felt when a friend called and said affirming words. People who keep a gratitude journal seem to develop a greater sense of connectedness to the world as they are reminded of things that others have done for them. No matter what the circumstances, you can usually find something for which to be thankful. To your neighbor for today's carpool, or to nature for a specific scenic view, to your spouse for helping you become a parent, or if the day has been really, really rotten, you can express gratitude that it's over. Another thought process that I think aids and abets our gratitude is what I would call aha, not oh no. As we become more and more grateful and more aware of ways that we feed the negative wolf, or how our grooves of negative thinking are deepened, we can be pretty hard on ourselves. And we can begin to feel dismayed that we repeatedly return to these negative thought patterns. Now, this particular practice that I'm going to describe now urges us toward self-compassion and gratitude for the awareness itself. As we realize our tendency to be negative, we often inflict interior reprimands such as, "Oh no, there I go again. I'm incorrigible. I'm hopeless." We can change this thought, "Oh no, I'm a lost cause," to, "Aha, there's that same pattern again. Thank you, God, for showing me that." Our constant ally, the breath, can assist us here as we breathe in the new awareness, aha, on the inhale, and breathe out the shaming judgment, oh no, on the exhale. Let's remember that shaming stymies a grateful and a thankful heart. Besides, I'm convinced that God is much more interested in our growth than our guilt. Now, another mental pattern that we need to look at is called word power. It pays to be attentive to our chatter, our inside chatter and our outside chatter. Monitoring the words we use can give us a window into the workings of the mind. As the poet Hafiz counseled in the 14th century, what we speak becomes the house we live in. So be on constant alert for these words: should, ought, must, need to, supposed to, they want me to, I've got to. These are signals that we may be responding to someone else's dictates and desires and not the voice of our own soul. We shouldn't, of course, become so selfish that we refuse to consider others' needs and wishes. But we can choose to make the authentic choice. Here's an example of this. Suppose your spouse wants you to attend a sporting event in which you have no interest whatsoever. Your inner voice may urge you to stay home and get some much-needed rest or catch up on some domestic chores. On the other hand, maybe the two of you haven't had much time together lately, and this would be a rare opportunity to be together. Both of these are authentic needs, and two outcomes are valid. You may choose, in this instance, to honor your personal need to stay home, because that part of your soul is speaking clearly. Or your love for your spouse may trump that need on this particular day because the equally authentic part of you that values relationship is speaking even more forcefully. In the latter case, you may choose to go to the game, but refusing and releasing the blaming statements, such as, "I had to go or he'd be upset," or "she made me go." The operative word in both cases, of course, is "I choose." There isn't a right choice, but there is an authentic choice. When you learn to pay close attention to your mental chatter, you can determine if you're empowering or disempowering yourself. External circumstances are constantly changing, but our perception of the situations and what we think and say about them determines not only whether we experience life as painful or joyful, but also how clearly we're connected to the authentic self and the still small voice of God whispering in our souls. Now there are a couple of mourning methods that I think are simple practices that can set the stage for the day and move us in the direction of a thankful heart. One of them is called the preparation prayer, and this works well for folks who like to survey the day ahead and take time to make a list, schedule their activities for some sense of calm efficiency. But sometimes when we put more things on this list than can be reasonably done, and we crowd it, we essentially program our own frustration. Now, if this is the case, if that list is for the day is too crowded, then defer or delegate or delete it down to manageable size. Then relax your body and slowly pray through this list for the day, inviting the Spirit of God to go before you, to accompany you, to guide you through every single moment. There's another morning practice that's been made popular by Kirk Jones, a minister whose books include Morning Brew and Jazzing Up the Journey. And he uses the words, the letters of the word brew to lay the foundation of the day. And he suggests that with our morning cup of brewed coffee or tea, we take those four letters and begin the day with them. The B is for be still. Spend a few moments in silence and serenity. The more stillness you practice, the more familiar the voice of God inside you and that of your own soul will be. The second letter in brew is R. Let that stand for receive God's love. Imagine yourself being enveloped in the light and love of God, whether you deserve it or not. The E can stand for embrace who you are. Be grateful for the unique combination of cells that is you. And pray that this set of gifts and graces can serve to make you a channel of love in the world. The W can stand for welcome the day. Greet the day with joy, anticipation, knowing you are not alone, but the Holy Spirit is your constant companion. The next practice I will call, thought management. One night I returned home after a long day and felt like a wilted flower, so exhausted that I wanted only to turn on the TV to something mindless and undisturbing. Well, what I saw was mindless, all right, but hardly undisturbing. It was a ridiculous sitcom full of crass language and rude people and shallow values. I felt like I was sitting down to a bowl of mental arsenic. I think we're charged with the task of feeding our minds reasonably good food, of being in charge of our minds rather than the other way around. Now, I often appreciate the diversity of spicy food both on my plate and on the screen. I enjoy movies with an intellectual edge and challenging themes. And I love going to a great movie with friends in the late afternoon and sharing dinner conversation about it later. But trash and gratuitous violence are poor nourishment for the soul. They shape our thoughts in insidious ways, and the thoughts have a subtle effect on the reality we project. Once again, let me say, energy flows where attention goes. So when we begin this thought management, we start noticing not only the mind food that we imbibe, but also the thoughts we formulate as a result. We can catch the thoughts as they rise in our heads and intentionally stop them, rather than waiting until they've done their toxic work. To notice negative thoughts is not to condemn or shame ourselves. Instead, our task is to be compassionate and gentle toward our unruly emotions. The emotions may be real, but we can choose to let them go. As we face the truth about our normal human tendencies, their power over us is gradually reduced, and thankful feelings somehow have room to grow. angry thoughts and afflictive emotions of frustration and revenge called forth old wounds and memories from our troubled past. The downward spiral then begins, and it accelerates. As we nurse those thoughts of how can they do this to me, or how can I get even, our bodies join in the spiraling by producing corresponding hormones. Conversely, emotions of hope, gratitude, laughter generate helpful endorphins and boost the immune system. As negative thoughts arise, just notice them, nip them in the bud, and reach for a more grateful thought. Remember the comical conversation of the character Tevye in that famous play, Fiddler on the Roof, beautiful musical? He would look at a situation through a justifiable negative lens, then smilingly he would tilt his head and consider a more positive alternative, saying, "Now on the other hand, few things are crystal clear, and interior conversations like Tevye's can help us sort things out and see all the options available." It may help to make a list of things for which you are thankful and refer to it as you stop those thoughts when you need to, such as, "I'm grateful for this process of growth," or "I love the smell of roses," or a list of affirmations such as, "I am moving toward hope and healing," or "I feel alive when I'm working in my garden." These are better substitutes than saying, "Hard times are just around the corner." We can choose instead to say, "Glory is waiting everywhere." We don't avoid troublesome thoughts that need to be explored, but we must stay away from the irritating recurrence of same old, same old, same old. This tactic puts us in the empowering position of being in charge of our minds rather than our minds being in charge of us. There's also a practice called the sacred seed. To do this practice, you sit in some serene place outside if the weather permits, and imagine that your heart is a fertile field that has been readied for planting. What kind of seeds do you want to grow? What kind of harvest can you expect? Are you willing to water your seeds with gratitude and faith and prayer? Another practice is called the meditation mind. There are many good instruction books on meditation, and I'll just make a couple of comments here. I think teachers through the ages have referred to the usual whirl inside our heads as the monkey mind, in which our thoughts are like wild monkeys jumping from limb to limb through the jungle, out of control. Now, taming the monkey mind is a skill that takes practice, practice, practice. Just as we can't learn to play the piano in one easy lesson, so the quieting of our minds is not accomplished in one session of meditation. It takes time to train that skittery monkey to respond to our bidding rather than to continue the frantic swinging from tree to tree. Now, any number of meditation methods can be useful. I think when you try a variety of techniques, over time you'll naturally settle into a pattern that fits your own temperament and time constraints. There's the relaxation response, mindfulness meditation, and centering prayer. And I think there are some general suggestions that go with all of those, such as sitting in with your back straight with feet flat on the floor and relaxing your body through a series of deep abdominal breaths and bringing your mind to one still point, a word, a phrase, a sound, that serves as the symbol of your stillness. Now I want to say a word about another mind process, and that is positive prayers. There seems to be a great deal of power in affirming one's petition as if it were already a reality. That is, seeing it in positive terms, being willing to express gratitude for something before it happens. Now, this is not just New Age guru advice. There are many prayer practitioners that take the verse from Mark 11 very literally. which says, "Believe you have already received it, and it will be yours." It's said that Mother Teresa believed in the positive aspects of prayer. The story is told that even as a person greatly committed to the cause of peace in the world, she refused to join an anti-war group. She insisted that she would prefer to be a part of a pro-peace movement instead. Asking for something reflects a lack of it. The implication is that we don't have it. So the method of positive prayer recommends that we visualize the abundance beforehand and feel the exhilaration and gratitude in the process, as if it were already accomplished. Now let's talk about bridges of the spirit, and I'll mention a few practices that may belong in this category. Of course, the obvious one is silence. The bridge of silence is like the undergirding that supports all these other spiritual bridges to a thankful heart. I know the silence feels awkward at the beginning. I know that it's sometimes scary. I know that it feels like you're wasting time that ought to be more productive. I know that the sound of silence is often deafening. I've been there. As an extrovert, I've been there in spades. But I can promise you that even if it is daunting, it is so, so worth it. It can change your life. At a pivotal point in my own journey, someone gave me a metaphor that introduced me to the potential of silent practice, and I was finally able to start believing it. And it was this: silent prayer is not the silence of a graveyard, but the silence of a garden growing. If you stand in the midst of a winter garden, it appears that absolutely nothing is happening in the deadening stillness. Yet even our memories of elementary biology remind us that there is vigorous activity, cellular movement, unseen life underneath the ground that will emerge in leaves and flowers and ultimately fruit. In my day-to-day work, companioning people on their spiritual journeys, one of the most frequent questions I hear is, "But how do I know it's the voice of God and not my own ego speaking in the silence?" I don't have an infallible litmus test, but there are certain pointers gleaned from scripture and wisdom traditions, prayer, human intuition. And it leads us to these questions to ask when we're listening to our inner voice. Is it loving? Is it compassionate? Is it forgiving? Or, on the other hand, is it self-serving? Does it enhance my interests? Does it diminish the personhood of another? Does it polish my halo? Honest answers to these questions will help you discern the voice of God from the voice of the ego. Another spiritual practice is called flow. We're always being told to get in the flow. And here's an imaginative exercise to strengthen that connection to flow. You sit in a quiet place or go for a walk beside the water if you can, and imagine Thanksgiving as a moving stream, moving steadily in the direction of aliveness. Picture yourself stepping into a light canoe with your paddle and just floating downstream on this positive current of Thanksgiving. Sure, you have to paddle and participate, but that powerful divine current provides the real energy. You don't have to invent the current or manufacture the water or force its flow. You just join in the joy of it, trusting that it's taking you to a healing, creative place. Another discipline of the spirit is called hardship, and I don't need to convince you that hardship is a refining fire that often burns away the dross and leaves pure gold of gratitude. Now, there are countless examples in our lives and those around us that hardship can leave a pile of gray ashes also and leave us full of cynicism and resentment. But when the smoke clears and the pain becomes manageable, the choice is ours. We can allow the experience to break us down or break us open. Both processes are painful, to be sure, but having faith in the formative outcome can help to produce the impetus for us to hang in there. We can cite the Pearl Principle, and when we do this, we acknowledge that if there's no inner irritation, no pearl is produced. Virtually everything that happens to us can become grist for the mill of spiritual growth, a catalyst for awakening to our deepest values. It's true for the oyster, and it's true for us. In this instance, I think Mother Nature teaches us the truth better than a room full of preachers. Another spiritual practice is that of hope. Now, the Odyssey from Hardship to Gratitude travels through this territory of hope, not wishful thinking, not optimism, though both are valuable, but something beyond that. We can choose to believe the best. We can choose to see the proverbial cup as half full instead of half empty. But helpful as these approaches are, they focus on things getting better. Hope, in a spiritual sense, runs deeper than that. It acknowledges the darkness at hand and asserts that even if things don't get better, there is ultimately a light at the core of things, a love that will not let us go. Hope puts our despair on hold so that healing can begin and gratitude can take root. Hope has a way of flickering in the distance even while desperate conditions occupy the foreground. Another spiritual reality that we can pay attention to is that of resilience. People do have this astounding way of bouncing back. Have you ever wondered why? I certainly have. I wonder why some folks opt for mere physical survival while others redefine their lives after a tragedy in surprising ways. It's as if they're not satisfied with surviving life. They actually want to live it. One factor I think that affects how this attitude sits with us has to do with what one believes about the cause of the event. If our belief system is one that says it's God's will, then a feeling of victimhood is almost inevitable. If, on the other hand, those who can let go of the cause or attribute it to randomness or mystery seem able to shift the available energy toward a creative response. I've observed these differing approaches in those who say, why me? And those who say, why not me? In the first group, the energy constricts, pulling inward in self-defeat, self-judgment. In the second group, the energy expands outward toward possibility. Awareness of our inborn gift, our capacity for resilience, can lead to deep gratitude. Another spiritual practice that involves our spirit is our connection to God and others. Now, this spiritual connection to God has been likened to a phone line that's always open. Christina Baldwin describes it like this, quote, "It's our half of the relationship to stay available for incoming calls. Sometimes I turn the ringer off. Sometimes I ignore the ringing. Sometimes I pick up the phone with suspicion. Sometimes I hang up. Sometimes I get impatient at the interruption, and sometimes I have no idea how to respond. The problem is not in the sending, but in the receiving." Unquote. So it's vital to keep our end of the line open and uncluttered so that we can partake of the greater gratitude that comes from the nature of God. Connection to others reminds us that we are created for community. A despairing woman said to me one day, "I can go on when I see someone else who has gone on." We underestimate the power of the stories we share with each other. It's my good fortune to meet now and then with a group of special friends to explore spiritual conundrums and challenging religious literature, and we enjoy meeting together. As we wrestle with sometimes unanswerable questions and probe the depths of our own lives, I am often overwhelmed with joy at just the privilege of being there. It reminds me of the truth of the old adage, "The whole is greater than the sum of its parts." Rachel Naomi Remen says it perfectly. Quote, "Perhaps real wisdom lies in not seeking answers at all. Any answer we find will not be true for very long. An answer is a place where we can fall asleep as life moves past us to the next question. After all these years, I've begun to wonder if the secret of living well is not in having all the answers, but in pursuing unanswerable questions in good company." Unquote. And what a blessing that is. Another spiritual practice is called willingness. To travel from the realm of despair to the realm of thanksgiving, one must go through a vital opening, and that is, of course, willingness. Attempting to leap straight into gratitude may feel forced and phony, but saying honestly that you are willing to move toward a thankful heart involves and invites the knowledge of how you might be resisting it. There are many specific ways to act on the willingness. We can be willing to be responsible for the choice, the thoughts we hold. We can be willing to receive love and joy from God. We can be willing to let go of judgment and blame. We can be willing to feel the possibilities of gratitude before the changes occur. We must be willing to be willing. Another is called the thank you, what next prayer. This prayer represents, I think, a very natural rhythm between gratitude and hope. It establishes our spirits in a stance of thanksgiving on the one hand, and it invites the guidance of God and opens us to the future on the other hand. It lends itself well also to the breath prayer format, because it attaches so seamlessly to the pattern of inhale and exhale. Inhale, thank you. Exhale, what next? So whether we're entering the domain of the body, the mind, or the spirit, a myriad of methods contain the potential to foster feelings of appreciation. Our job is to take a step, because the bridge is going to be there. You can count on it.